When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Beavs get a big one today. They land quarterback Malik Murphy, a transfer from Duke who was once a Texas quarterback, and kind of a coup for the Beavs right now because quarterback play for them, not consistent and frankly not good this last year. Malik Murphy can play a little bit.
Yeah, well, and the part that's surprising is the McCoy kid that they got was at Idaho. He was one of the top players at that FCS level, like, to the point where he was up for the Walter Payton Award, which is basically their version of the Heisman. It's a similar style. So it's clear that offensively, Oregon State is moving towards a athletic quarterback that they want to go and grab. They want to move away from the types like Gulbranson, which, no offense to Gulbranson, he's fine in the pocket and he can throw the ball well, but he's not going to use his legs. It's almost like Oregon State has finally come to the terms of, you need to get a more athletic quarterback in that position so that when things do break down, because in a lot of these games where you play better opponents, you're not going to have the O-line talent that matches with the D-line talent. So how do you get that savior? You get a quarterback that can add themselves into the run game. And you've seen how big of a deal that can be at the college level. I think this is a huge get, especially with all of the, I don't want to say negativity towards Trent Bray, but
sure,
let's just say that that year didn't end the way Oregon State fans expected, and they're not happy. Now, to be fair to Bray and his staff, they had an unfathomable amount of injuries. Like right now, I think they're the only team that's ever had more injuries than the Detroit Lions. You had tight ends playing defensive end. So it wasn't entirely their fault,
yeah.
But to get Malik Murphy, that is a huge grab for the Beavs.
Well, and you know, I had seen him play. I did not realize the sheer size of this guy. You're not getting a jitterbug quarterback that's like,
no,
dancing.
He's strong.
He's like Cam Newton sized. I'm reading he's 6'5", 230. Like that's a freaking horse in the backfield. That's a tight end lining up under center. And to think about the things that he's going to be able to do. And it wasn't like he necessarily needed greener pastures. I don't know why. Did Duke pick up a different?
Yes. So
who did they go get?
So Duke is going after the Tulane transfer. I'm reading this right here.
It's
on
Mensa, I think is his
CBS
name.
CBS Sports. Yeah. So they're going after Mensa. And Mensa had a good year this year, but Murphy had a better one. Murphy threw for just under 3,000 yards. He had multiple rushing scores. He threw for a school record 26 touchdowns. But more importantly, he understands how to play with inferior talent. No offense to Duke, they're not an ACC blue blood when it comes to football. They're a fine program. Manny Diaz is a fine coach. But you don't look at Duke and go, wow, that's a great Duke team. But all of a sudden, like this year, Duke was a quality win for some of those top-tier ACC teams. They only had a couple losses, and frankly, they had no business losing to Miami. They should have beat Miami, and if they beat Miami, all of a sudden, we're talking about them in a completely different light. We might be talking about them similar to how we talked about South Carolina at the end of the year, where, hey, they're not going to get in the playoffs, but it seems like they're growing. it's weird to me that they would want to move on from Murphy, because Murphy right. has shown that he can be successful in mop-up duty and in the couple starts that he got when Ewers was hurt at Texas. He's now shown when you give him a team for an entire year, he can be an above-average quarterback, and he can elevate those around him. That sounds like the perfect grab for Oregon State. So there's a question there of, how was Oregon State able to go and get him? Did they overreach? Are they paying him more through right. the NIL? Which, if they are... good.
The fact that they can get there, great.
Good.
Yeah.
This is a great victory for Oregon State.
I don't mean this to sound like a slight, but I'm like, what's the catch? Like, why this guy with the numbers he put up, with the wins that he's got as a starter, I think he's 11-3 as a starter mm-hmm. in his career. Why is, I mean.
And you get 2 years of him.
Why is he not going to a Power Four school? Why is somebody else in the Big 12 or the Big 10 or the SEC not offering him that? Is there something we're missing about him?
Like, maybe, but at the same, I mean, look, Oregon State, you would have probably 3 more wins if your quarterback play was better.
Yes.
If you don't throw, 4 interceptions, 5 interceptions to Nevada, you win that football game. And again, you had a tight end playing defensive end in that game. You were out basically your entire starting defensive unit. So, to go in and make this grab, they also went in and grabbed the Bowers kid, the mm-hmm. tight end. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden, Trent Bray is starting to put together a pretty good group. And I wonder, too, and we talked about this yesterday with WSU, like where do they go on their route to find their next head coach? Bray has made it pretty clear that he plans on staying at Oregon State, and he plans on staying there for a long time. It doesn't seem like there's going to be much Power Four interest to go out and get Trent Bray, because I think there's a lot of teams in the Power Four that look at Bray and say, well, he shouldn't be a head coach yet anyways. Yet Oregon State was willing to take that risk on him because of how well he'd done there as a defensive coordinator and because he'd obviously played. Does that factor into some of these recruits of going, hey, this coach is going to put me on a pedestal. I can be the big fish in the small pond at Oregon State. They're going to give me the keys, and they're going to take care of me.
Yeah.
But I also know that if I have to come back for a second year, Bray isn't going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Bray is going to be here, and I don't have to worry about coaching changes. My OC might leave. My DC might leave. They might go and find greener pastures, but it feels like Bray's greenest pasture is the pasture that he's in right now at Oregon State. And so that might be a way of getting some of these recruits in who've been bouncing around a little bit.
Yeah.
I think if you read the tea leaves a little bit, we heard Trent Bray to end the season, you know, answering the question pretty bluntly on what they need to increase the program's
money.
Viability. Cash money into our pockets, basically making the same calls that Kenny Dillingham has, but to no ears because nobody cares compared to Arizona State. That being said, the NIL money that they do have, you know, maybe it's what is it? Occam's razor, the most simple possibility or the most simple plan or whatever is always essentially the true one.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they just offered him the most money. Maybe Oregon State prioritized giving a quarterback a couple million dollars and outbidding everybody else. If I'm Trent Bray and I'm saying, all right, how could I bring a guy in this offseason? It's simply put, we need to figure out what other schools are offering our targets, and we need to outbid them by $200,000, $300,000. And everything that Will just said, you have that extra year of cushion as a pillow to fall back on. You've got the coaching staff, or at least the head coach that's going to be there, so you've got a program that you can lean into a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Those are attractive to a kid, and then you add more money to it. I think it's an easy sign on the dotted line for Murphy.
And then also up further north, the Washington State Cougars officially have seen John Mateer commit to Oklahoma. We talked a little bit yesterday. We're talking about Dickert leaving, the possibility even of Ben Arbuckle coming back to Pullman to coach that team. But Mateer now officially gone, and you were reading yesterday that his bag around $3 or $4 million.
Yeah, the guess is that it's going to be somewhere between $3 million to $3.5 million. The interesting thing for me is I don't think that that's a guaranteed starting spot for Mateer. Like, obviously he's going there.
Well, so Arnold's leaving, right?
Right.
Who else is in there?
The Haynes kid or Hankins kid.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
The guy, he had a couple starts. They benched Jackson Arnold for him in the middle of the Tennessee game, and then he ended up playing in the Auburn game and a couple other games as well. He's still there. So Mateer being the outright starter right away, that's not guaranteed. Now, Mateer had a phenomenal year, right? But you're going to go up against a quarterback competition. It's a younger kid. It's a more athletic kid. He's a blue chip prospect, where again, Mateer is not. Now, Mateer can always lean on the fact of, look at what I did. Mm-hmm. But to go in and automatically say, well, Mateer's the starter day one, I think that's a bit bold. Don't be shocked if all of a sudden we're looking next year and Mateer's in the portal again and people are talking about him. You know, hey, he went to a new spot. He got money. It was the right move at the right time. But he ran into a better prospect. And sometimes in a place like Oklahoma, you're going to have more cooks in the kitchen than just the coaching staff.
Right.
And so where do the boosters come in? Is there an upheaval of, we want to see this kid play? Because there is some belief the reason that we saw him play this last year is because of booster push for him to play over Arnold.
And I just wonder in general how complicating NIL is for depth chart issues. When you have someone who is making the bag and not playing well, and somebody in the team needs to move off of him for the kid that isn't, how odd is that? And I mean, I'm not sure how much we actually have been seeing it, but there's certainly, when you pay a kid $3 or $4 million, if he shows up and gets beat out, that's not going to sit well with the people who are paying the $3 and $4 million,
100%.
Which isn't really going to be the school. I mean, it's the collectives.
Right. Well, and that's the other, like, that's what we're going to have to fight through all of this as well. Yeah. Of while we're in this NIL era, you just kind of have to deal with who is going to be the starter and can you keep the boosters at bay or show them why this player should start over this one, right? Like, so the quarterback over at Oklahoma, his name was Michael Hawkins Jr.
Mm-hmm.
So he is a younger freshman. He was a big difference maker for them when they played Auburn. He struggles a little bit throwing the football, but where he makes up for it is in his athletic ability, his ability to run. Against Auburn, he had like a 50-yard touchdown, mm-hmm, where no one even touched him.
Yep.
And so if you can use Arbuckle to help him grow in that role, you would think with his speed, he would be able to jump a player like Mateer, where Mateer is going to be more of, he can throw a little bit, he can run a little bit. It feels like more of a consistent option.
Yeah.
Are you going to have the right boosters that are willing to give the money but sit back and trust the coaches? And at some schools, the coaching staffs have proven that, hey, no, we know where to play the right players. They're going to help us get a victory. I know that you committed that NIL to that player. We're going to de-recruit him. He will transfer out. He will leave. You will be able to save some of your money. Because remember,
right,
once you leave, that money goes away.
Right.
And I think that's kind of the argument that coaches are going to have with boosters. But this isn't a new problem. Boosters, especially at the big schools, they were finding ways to give people money or benefits
This is not their first rodeo.
It's just out in the open and how you handle it. Like, the whole issue with Texas before Sark got there was, well, there's too many cooks in the kitchen, and Strong and the old Houston coach who had gone over there, they weren't able to handle those boosters and keep them at bay. They had too much infighting, and that's why they weren't able to see more results on the field. Sark, he kind of watched how Nick Saban did it at Alabama, and then he comes in and he shows them, hey, we can win and we can put this player, like right now, Quinn Ewers, he needs to be our starter because Arch isn't there yet, but Arch will be there soon. And you know that type of upswell from fans and especially from boosters who are paying NIL deals to Arch, it's getting louder and louder by the day.